Welcome to this very special bonus episode of the DLC podcast for E3 week. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, and I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, Christian Spicer. Hey, Christian, how you doing?
I'm great. It's the most wonderful time, right? Where it's, I love
as
video
gamers,
games.
As gamers, this is the best. We are up late. It is Sunday night. Late. I just got back from the Bethesda conference. I skipped out on the Chainsmokers, who I guess have I heard of them? Do I know them?
You're Christian? Probably not young and hip enough, or actually no. They're not that. Let's just say they're no Blink 182.
Yeah, which was last year's Bethesda conference, which I also skipped out on to go and do our bonus episode that time. But yeah, we're up late. I just had a whole day, actually 2 days, of press conferences because E3 started on Saturday this year. We will have another episode tomorrow talking about the Sony conference and the Ubisoft conference. But tonight we're going to get through.
It'll be at night though tomorrow. It's not regular time tomorrow. It's after right. That stuff. Yeah.
You're probably not even listening to this until tomorrow anyway because
after those conferences there'll be a thing and you can listen to it and whatever.
We're talking about EA. We're talking about Microsoft, and we're talking about Bethesda tonight. So we're splitting up our conferences into two episodes over the next 2 days. And then we will have our big E3 wrap-up show the following Monday in its regular time slot, which we will have our usual E3 guest, Ben Silverman, who will be with us. And very excited to have him every year. He's our favorite. And if you want more constant updates, at least from me, you can listen to my Anchor show, which is called Newest, Latest, Best. Download the Anchor app at anchor.fm or just go to anchor.fm/NLB for Newest, Latest, Best. I've been uploading stuff in real time all throughout the show. I will continue to do it as I get hands-on with stuff. So lots of content there as well. But Christian, we are up late. We're going to talk about the stuff. You were watching all of the streams of the conferences, right?
Mm-hmm. And it was a real good year. Bethesda, and I don't know if it was like this live, they had one glitch where like the sound seemed way out of sync on all of their streams. I don't know if that's how it was live when they were showing like the creator thing or whatever. Like no, that trailer was just super out of sync. Hmm. But everything else, I remember years past where it's like you have 10 browsers open and you keep switching to the one that's, you know, actively streaming and isn't hung up. This year they've all been silky, silky smooth.
Well, that's good. I was live at all of the events in person, so we'll have two different perspectives on that. Hopefully you guys are as excited as we are because it's some good stuff. As I said, it started on Saturday this year, so yesterday, Saturday, EA had their big EA Play event, which actually wasn't even in downtown Los Angeles this year. Every year, E3 is in and around the Los Angeles Convention Center. And last year, EA pulled out of E3 proper, but through their own event at LA Live, which is right there at the convention center. This year, again, not participating in the actual E3 conference, but throwing their own event concurrently. But it's not downtown. It's not in the area of the rest of the show. It's in its own place in Hollywood at the Palladium. And they transformed that whole area into a big outdoor craziness with food trucks and lots of ways to play the game. And they opened it up to fans. But there was a section before the fans were allowed in when it was just press. And then they had the big press conference. So that's where we'll start. I kind of feel like I want to do like a whole separate podcast of just like the food of E3 because I've been eating like this is food everywhere. And anyway, well, let's start with the EA press conference. They started things off with their where did they start? I had it open here in a second. Oh, they started things off with their sports franchises. Madden 18 is going to have a narrative mode, which I believe was one of my predictions in our last episode. And it looks like I think overall story is a big part of what EA is doing. It seems like narrative for across all their franchises, regardless of the genre, be it you know, a racing game like Need for Speed, be it NBA, FIFA, or Madden, or you know, even their you know, shooter franchises, all the things that would you expect to have story. Narrative is a big thing, and it seems like it's happening in all the sports franchises. I think that's a really cool thing. It's something that I think will make me want to play those games more than I do. I'm down for like an 8-hour campaign mode in a sports game. I think that's pretty rad. What did you think of that stuff?
So one, I need to say I don't think you will, because they've been FIFA's had it, NBA 2K's had it, and I don't think you've played any of those. Am I right?
No, but that's true. But I'm more of a football guy. I mean, I like basketball a lot, but I don't like
MLB
basketball
the Show
games.
Has it.
MLB the Show has it. Yeah. Do they really?
Yeah.
But see, I'm like a football guy. I could get behind a football story. I want to play Friday Night Lights, the game.
Does it end with him having brain trauma and the NFL Players Association fighting for health coverage for him as the league denies it?
No, I said Friday Night Lights, the game, not whatever that
Will real Smith life movie. NFL, the game.
What was the Will Smith movie? The
concussion?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that being said, I will predict that neither one of us will play these to completion. We might dab our toe into it, be like, okay. But that being said, where I think that my way in that we might is that I have certainly played way more of a fighting game this year than I normally do. And that's because Injustice 2 story is phenomenal.
See?
Would I prefer that game to be a third person action game with that same story? Yeah, I would. But, you know, an incredibly well told story, you know, can get its hooks into me to have me doing something that I otherwise might not be doing. But Injustice 2 is also some of my favorite characters ever portrayed in such an amazing way. I don't know if I care about Mr.
Alex
Football.
Hunter.
But I do. So it's tough. Like, part of me rolls my eyes super hard at this. And then part of me is like, I love single player narrative games. I need to give these a chance. And then part of me is like, what I just said to you, I haven't given any of them a chance already. What's going to change my mind now? I think Need for Speed might when we get there, but I don't think Madden story mode is going to be the thing that gets me hyped.
Well, what about story in Need for Speed? They showed more of what we can expect from Need for Speed Payback, and it's, you know, it's got that Fast and the Furious kind of narrative thing going on. It's got cutscenes. It's got, you know, it does have a race mode. I actually had behind the closed doors hands on with this game, and they do have like full on just like racing mode if you want to play races in Need for Speed. But there is a campaign. And that campaign involves, you know, setting up chases and doing stuff that trigger cutscenes. You know, the one we saw was very linear, but it was, you know, chasing this truck down and busting a high performance concept car out of the back of it. I thought that looked cool, and I as somebody that, you know, isn't really into racing games but likes the sort of over the top action arcadey stuff of a Burnout, this looked like, you know, throwback to Burnout with the slow motion crashes, and it gives me kind of reason to do races because now I'm sort of playing through the story and there's context for stuff. I really think Need for Speed Payback looks awesome.
I thought it looked gorgeous. I heard it played very well. I have not had a chance to go hands on with it yet. My question for that, like, I think that game could be huge for me just knowing the kind of games that I like. And plus there's like a Mustang all over that. So I'm like, yeah, I'm in. My question for that, and I think the hard thing to do with racing game narrative is fail states. And I think that's what made Burnout Paradise and Forza Horizon 3 so great, is that if you fail to race, you're just in the world and you're going to do the next thing. So I don't know, with like this, like voice prompted or, you know, narrative told where it's like, we got to get on the truck.
I can answer that question if you want.
Oh yeah. I'd love to.
Cause I failed.
Yeah.
And when I was behind closed doors, I didn't make it to the truck in time. One of the quest objectives was get to the semi before you reach the tunnel.
Yeah.
And I didn't. And it said you didn't. And it started it over.
See, that's
from a checkpoint. There was like a checkpoint, right, where we like got into the cars or whatever.
And that's the hard part, because you want there to be a real challenge, right? You don't want somebody playing the game and be like, look, you don't even need to do anything and you win. So you want it to be a challenge, but it can't be too challenging that you're hitting a few of those reloads. Because I think because in hearing that same stuff like, here it comes, get under the truck or whatever, you'll be like, yeah, yawn inducing. But if done well and it threads that needle just right, or you can, you know, dial in the difficulty for you, it looks epic. I like the Need for Speed movie. So, like, you know, I like the Fast and Furious movies. I'm on board.
It's funny that they kept saying we're taking the cinematic approach, just not the cinema that's based on our game. A right. Different movie franchise, but it's totally cinematic.
That movie did not do well, but I liked it because they used all practical cars for the chases.
I actually enjoyed that movie a little bit. It was not great, but it
was super silly, right? It was super silly. Yeah.
But yeah, Need for Speed Payback, I played it. It looks awesome. It really feels like Burnout in a lot of ways. Like when you hit your nitro or your nitrous, it does the Burnout thing where it goes boo, you know, with the focal length. And then the car crashes are Burnout. It's like the thing I've been asking for every time we talk about a racing game on our show. I'm like, give me a Burnout. So it's Burnout, but prettier and with what seems to be like a cheesy, not very well written, but maybe could still be fun campaign mode.
As long as it leans into it in the right way, I'm totally okay with that. The one with FMV, which I think it was that, whatever that last one was, Ghost Run, Need for Speed Runner, Run. Like that didn't lean into it enough. And it was like, I don't know if I'm laughing at you or with you.
Right. But I thought it was really cool. Like that moment in the demo where you're the guy and you're driving, what is it? Mustang he's driving. And he pulls up to the semi and then it goes to the cutscene. And then she busts out of the back in the other car and you're just dynamically put into her continuing the story, like running away. I like that stuff. I think it's cool to basically play an action sequence from a Fast and the Furious movie, but play all the parts. You know, like you're just it jumps you around into whoever's doing the cool thing at any given moment. I think that's rad.
And I'd love to play an action scene like with two people each controlling their own person, but we'll talk about that later.
Well, yeah, they definitely should. I mean, why not talk about that now? The newest game from the team behind Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons is called A Way Out.
And it's just like Brother. If you like Brothers, you're going to love this game.
It's actually the opposite of Brothers, isn't
it's
it?
So like, different.
Brothers, well, first of all, yeah, it looks completely different. But Brothers, the whole thing with Brothers was like one person controlling two people. And now it's like, no, it's two people controlling two people, and it has to be. Which I thought was kind of an interesting twist. But much more cinematic looking, a completely different art style than Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons. It's much more a third person action, you know, it looks like GTA or Uncharted or something. And it is about these two brothers that break out of prison and then have a life outside of prison. And it certainly seems like there's a lot of game after the breakout of the prison. You know, like the prison break stuff is just the first part.
That's what the prison break showrunners told Fox also.
Right. Well, this is like
we have five seasons. We have five seasons.
We got a total Bible. Don't worry. This is one of the few games where I've looked at the trailer and gone, I feel like the trailer just spoiled stuff.
Man, it looks this. I mean, you know me, and our listeners know me. Like this, I love the balls of like it's co-op. It's the only way to play. An AI can't take over. You're playing it co-op. We want you to play it co-op. It's going to be split screen, even if you're playing online.
Right.
It looks awesome, and now. You know, I'm not saying I don't trust this team. Brothers was an incredible game, but I'm watching this and just thinking, hey, Naughty Dog, are you listening?
Well, it does feel a lot like sort of this next progression of what Naughty Dog does. And you got to feel, I was having this conversation with some game journalist dudes at E3, and we were all kind of talking about that. And somebody, you know, was saying, like, you got to know that Naughty Dog, like, thought about this. It's not like nobody thought about this. It's just really friggin' hard to do. There's no way they didn't go, wouldn't it be cool if a second player could play Nate's brother, you know, in Uncharted 4? I'm sure somebody had that thought, but then they went, oh, this game's not coming out for 4 more years if we try that.
And how much does it limit your sales where I literally can't play the game by myself at 4 in the morning? You know, like people talk about how hard Destiny's raids are because you got a squad. I know that's 6 people, but this is... In the game, it's only with someone else, so you can't go back and replay it. It's very risky in that regard.
That's true. Yeah. It does some really interesting stuff, though. Like, one player will be in a cutscene, like a full-on set-your-controller-down cutscene, and the other player will be watching them do those things. So the cutscene is being rendered in real time, and their character is really animated inside the cutscene, and the other player is, like, able to watch those animations from his in-game view. But as you said, it's cut split screen, and the split is kind of dynamic, and that happens regardless of whether someone is sitting next to you or not. It's just sort of the aesthetic of the game. I didn't get behind closed doors with this one yet, but I talked to a bunch of people who did, and they say it's actually very reminiscent of a David Cage game, that it's pretty linear, and the things you do, I mean, you can make choices on how it happens, but it's more like Heavy Rain or Beyond Two Souls in the sense of, you know, you make these hard decisions and the game branches more than being like an Uncharted game.
That sounds awesome to me too. I just started thinking as like picturing that, a Heavy Rain where two people are making choices and they're both splintering, going different ways. And then I just pictured the poor writer in the room throwing her computer off the table.
Yeah. Nightmare. But yeah, this game I think was the biggest surprise of the EA press conference. It certainly was the only unknown thing other than Anthem, and we'll get to that. But it was sort of the only unknown game that we saw a lot of at the EA press conference. And I think a lot of people came away very excited. I certainly loved the developer, whose name I don't have in front of me. But man, what a charming guy. He seems very, very proud of this game. So I'm kind of rooting for him.
Yeah.
So we saw some new Battlefield 1 expansion content, lots of stuff about FIFA. We kind of already talked about that stuff.
Those two dudes, though, like, I don't know how we become those two dudes, but I feel like we're the video game version of the two bald guys.
I want to be the two dudes in, what do they call them? Two dudes in jackets or two dudes in blazers. That's what it is.
Yeah, they were great. Those guys were great.
I thought that same thing. I was like, how did Christian and I become that for video games?
Someone give us a studio. We have the rapport. We just need like the nice little set design
stuff. Yeah, we need the nice set design and the budget. And then we need John Oliver to guest on our show. But you know, the big finale of the press conference was Star Wars Battlefront 2, and the way they decided to feature that game was to give us a half an hour of multiplayer game being played live right there, right in the room.
Did you say awful? I think it's the shorthand version of what you're trying to say. The way they tried to show that game was awful. The game looks awesome. I don't, you know, it's like the dissecting conference presentation versus gameplay. But I love content creators, but they are not presenters.
Yeah, actually, a friend of the show, Ben Kuchera on Polygon, wrote a really interesting, scathing article about how, like, this is a lesson to be learned. EA, don't, you know, influencers are not hosts. They are not on-air talent. They do YouTube videos, and sometimes they're very good at them, and sometimes they can do other things, but when you give them a much more responsibility than that, it doesn't always work out.
Okay, so Jeff's going into an analysis of influencers over, this is the most incredible podcast battle you've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I will say, I kind of jumped to that, but it was a cool way that they brought out stormtroopers, and they brought out the lead actress who's playing the main character in the single-player content. She was great. Her enthusiasm was genuine and awesome, and they showed a really cool trailer. And I was like, oh, you know, that's the trailer, that's cool. But then they're like, we're going to do 30 minutes, and it made what is a gorgeous, seems like a very exciting, fun game, just seem interminable and boring. And I hate using that word, but my goodness, it was really the worst way they could have possibly ended the show, and it bums me out because the game looks awesome.
It's this other thing too of this forced esports upon games that haven't cultivated its own esports following. Like maybe Battlefront 2 will have one and it'll be awesome, but it like Evolve was the same way. Evolve was a great game when it worked, but this is the next big esport. You have to kind of let that happen. Like the XFL wasn't the next big innovation in football. Like you just have to let it happen, and they're trying to force it upon a thing, and so then like that's awkward and stilted, and they're trying to shoutcast a new game mode that like there's people aren't familiar with. You're not watching at home, you don't know what it is. You're also introducing it to new people who are stumbling upon this because it's E3, the biggest, you know, week in gaming. And yeah, just show me an awesome trailer, highlight some of the things, and then you can even say something like, you know, we've had these following people playing the game for the past hour. Here's some amazing in-game moments they had. Like when that guy got shot off the top of the like the droid walker or whatever. Yeah. That was cool. But just show me that, you know, like you're going to have your own emergent gameplay, everything you love about Star Wars, blah, 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 blah. By the way, while you're here, we invite you to come play. But right? Like, right.
Well, yeah. And the fact that they're, you know, in control of their own event, they're not part of E3. They're not, they don't have to fit into a time frame, and they are streaming on their own official channel. What you do is you have the cool, you know, 2 to 5 minute cut down of a bunch of games that you've played, what that, like you said, have cool moments. And then you go, if you want to see full 30 minutes of gameplay, stay tuned to the stream after the press conference.
Yeah.
And we'll play a whole game and you can watch it in real time to prove that the game is, you know, playable right now. But don't make all of us live in the audience sit there and watch this interminable match where a guy just like crashes into a building. You know, that's the most exciting part, is when some dude like just crashes his jet into a building. I called it a jet. Like, I don't know anything about Star Wars. What an idiot. Anyway, again, that's us like criticizing the form of the press conference. Right. And I think that's part of it. Like, these are presentations, and it's, you can't help but sort of, you know, critique the theatricality of it, because that was a major misstep.
For better or worse, how things presented can sink or swim an entire product at times. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but it happens. I do have to say, though, that EA's decision to kind of bet the farm on Frostbite, I'm off. It's so beautiful.
It's so beautiful, it's, dude. And it works with everything. Like,
everything.
Speed looks amazing, and Star Wars looks amazing. It just all looks
FIFA
amazing.
FIFA is just amazing. Yeah. And yeah, I didn't think Battlefront 2 could look better than Battlefront, but some Darth Maul, when he's in, like, I hate the shiny world of the prequels.
Because, but it looks
it just
amazing.
Doesn't make sense. But yeah, when I see Darth Maul's like lightsaber reflecting off a column, and then with like a different angle and different light source off of the ground as he comes around a corner, I was just like, oh, well, I'm buying this game.
Yeah. Yeah. The doofy, battle droid tank that's in the movie looking all doofy in the game is like, oh, that tank looks badass. Like, I'm into that tank, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy. And it looks kind of fun with the multiplayer that they're, like, mashing up, where, like, Han Solo can show up in the prequels. And
that's what threw me off, because I know they said, like, in that first trailer where it was, like, across all things, but I thought maybe your heroes would be contingent on the map. And so they had Darth Maul running around, like, oh, someone has Darth Maul. And it's like, oh, and here comes Rey. And I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, I know. It's bizarre. But it's kind of neat, you know? I think that'll be a fun twist. I had a chance to go hands-on behind closed doors with the single player campaign, and this is certainly an early contender for me of game of the show, because it's what I wanted from the first game. It's like an original Star Wars story. It does, I said this on my newest latest best show, but it does feel a little weird. Like the mission that we can play at the show, you start off in a TIE fighter fighting in the, you know, in space, which is awesome. But you're like shooting down X-wings and shooting down Corellian cruisers. And it just kind of feels wrong, man. I'm like, I'm the bad guy. I'm the Imperial. The Emperor just died. And
you need to read the new Thrawn book. He did such a great job of putting you as the Empire, as the protagonist, and really cool.
Be the Empire. They're baddies,
but you might want to be the Empire. I'm still curious, and they've certainly done it before. X-Wing, I mean, TIE Fighter was an incredible game. Dark Forces was pretty incredible. I'm curious, because this is in that gray area, right, between the end of Jedi and before Force Awakens, and so I don't know when the New Order, like, what splinter, you know what I mean, like, there's a room for you to still be a good guy.
The crazy thing is it takes place the entire time between Return of the Jedi and A Force Awakens. They said that the story in the game will span 30 years.
Huh.
So it's...
But only 4 hours?
Man, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, the cutscenes are incredible. It looks... I mean, there's clearly like real actors that they cast in all the parts. It is a fully produced CGI Star Wars story that you get to play. And so you start in a TIE fighter and you fight stuff, and then you crash into this on purpose. You crash into this rebel, this giant rebel ship, and you disembark, and then it's the first person shooter, and you're shooting down rebel scum, and you've got this robot on your back that you can deploy at any point, and it'll like stun enemies for you, and then you like disable these ion cannons, and it's it's Battlefield, or yeah, Battlefield with a Star Wars skin. It's the amazing, like, Battlefield 1 campaign that we both really praised, but done with a Star Wars skin, which to me is a win. That just, it's just what I want. It's so good.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have them archived on my YouTube of my playing the single player in Battlefront 1. I was like, this is incredible, this is incredible. But all I can think about is playing this on PC with a Star Wars mod over it, and if that's what they're doing. But actually, but the best thing that Disney's done, and they don't do everything right, but the stuff that they've made canon in the Star Wars universe now, they clearly think about and yeah. give weight and merit to, and having it be, yes, this is part of our universe. And so to have this game have a narrative that is, yes, part of that universe, that's telling that story between Jedi and Force Awakens. Yeah. It looks.
Yeah, that's what I was so surprised about. You're going to give them 30 years to play with, like, this yeah. video game? That's a big swath of time to have control over and sort of define. I was pretty surprised, but it looks really good.
And it's this year.
Yeah, it is this year. Yeah.
Man. Only thing I know, though, is that I only have $500 for my gaming budget for the rest of the year, so I hope nothing big comes out.
Well, that's a perfect transition to the Microsoft conference, which kicked off this afternoon. Again, I was there in person with this, like, just staggeringly, must have been so expensive, 4K screen that they had that was the size of a football field, it seemed. It was massive and gorgeous in the room at the Galen Center in downtown Los Angeles. And, you know, of course, Microsoft made the whole thing about Scorpio, or as we now know it, Xbox One X.
So X neither gonna give it to you.
Or as people have been liking to call it, the ox.
Well, the clever thing is Xbox One X, what is it, an anagram? Or as you, if you write it vertically, it spells Xbox?
Yeah, E-B and then O-X, yeah. Xbox One X, Xbox.
Yeah.
Or the ox. I think people are calling it the ox. That's kind of cool. Or X-O-X, I don't know.
I do like the way that Phil referred to the original Xbox as the OG. I was like, even you know your name suck at this point.
Yeah.
Because the OG's coming too. And the,
yeah. Yeah, right. The show kicked off just unveiling the thing. I think it's pretty uninteresting from a design perspective as far as its looks. It's not.
Oh, I think it's interesting. It's smaller than the. This is the most. Like, how. With the original Xbox One. Like the one that I still have. Like, were they just so afraid of heat sink issues because of the Xbox 360 bricking problem? They just put, like, if I open it up, is it the size of a Wii in there? You know? Because this thing is smaller than the S, which is a sexy console, and it's more powerful than anything that's ever come out on a console. Like, that's, I think that's pretty incredible design. I think it's a good looking console. It's, you're not going to put it on a pedestal.
Is it?
But let's look at,
I think it's an impressive design as far as function. But I don't think it's good looking. I think it's
one of the best consoles to come out in terms of just like the aesthetic. It's minimalist. It has clean lines. It's not overly complicated with patterns that don't match. I like it. I'll wait for the white one until I buy
it. Didn't it look also? I thought it was kind of weird that there was like a lip that stuck out under which the drive seemed to be. You know, like. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if that was like, oh crap, we had to put a drive in this thing.
Well, I mean, I think that should. It's funny that they didn't even make a big deal about it, but having a Blu-ray, a 4K Blu-ray drive in it is a real differentiator from the PlayStation Pro 4 Pro. But they kind of just offhandedly mentioned that and moved on and didn't make a big deal about it. And I think that, you know, $500 for a 4K Blu-ray player ain't too shabby just alone. But they didn't really seem to care about that. So Xbox One X, do you think the name – what do you think of the name?
I think it's fine. I think they're in this weird naming convention where they don't quite know what to do. Hopefully next generation they just go back to Xbox or something, you know, like – and it's going to be this iterative form. It's fine. It's not great. It's fine. I wish they called it the Scorpio just so that I could have had a guess right. But, you know, it's fine. It's fine.
$499, I mean, we'll skip to that. That was the end of the show. But since we're talking about the X – I expected it to be a little lower. As I mean, it's a hell of a lot of console for $500. I mean, if you're looking at it at, from pure PC parts,
yeah,
there's a lot of horsepower in there for $500. So even that is impressive. But dropping the price of the Xbox One S to $250, now you're at double the price of that for what is a sort of marginal upgrade as far as,
because that has the 4K player in it also, right? So S.
No.
So that's not even a differentiator between
I don't think it has a 4K Blu-ray player, does it?
I think the Xbox One S does. I'm going to Google Xbox One.
Paznos 83 says he's pretty sure the S has the UHD drive.
Yeah, it does. It has the UHD Blu-ray performance drive in the S.
Oh, well, there you go. Maybe that's why they didn't make a big deal out of it. Shows you how much I know. Everybody in the chat knows except me. That's impressive. So I guess that's why they didn't make a very big deal about it. But still, double the price for – I mean, the games looked stunning. It started off with Forza 7, the announcement of Forza 7, which made a lot of sense as far as a showpiece, you know, just – gorgeous looking cars and gorgeous looking environments running at 60 frames per second at native 4K. That's pretty nice. And my goodness, did it look really good.
I need that Digital Foundry video or something, because that's the thing. They showed all these things and they looked great, but how garbage are they on my original Xbox? Is it like 20 frames per second? You know, you're not going to be able to play it. Or is it 30 frames at 900p? Like, it's I think there's a lot of value in that box and in the X, the way PC prices are currently priced, and the size, the footprint of the thing, and the ease of connecting it to a TV and blah, blah, blah. And, but I just don't quite know. I feel like it's powerful enough that this could have been a new console generation for them.
And
I think the fact that I can still play the games on it, and unless they're just atrocious, unless Anthem is running at 5 frames per second for me, I think it's a really hard, it's this really weird sell where, you know, tech lust people will buy it because we buy those things. And then I'm not sure who else it's a quote unquote need for. I think Sony said 1 out of 4, 1 out of 5 pro purchases or PS4 purchases are pros. And I think the X might have a harder time hitting that attach rate. I don't know. I kind of want one, but at the same time, I think it's just because I'm an idiot.
Yeah, no, I definitely want one because I'm an idiot. And I, you know, I have a 4K TV. I think it would be awesome to be running native 4K content. I think it's all pretty, but to be honest, it's not that much more pretty. And I really feel like they missed opportunities to create differentiators for it. You know, they could have either, as you said, really made it a new console generation and said, hey, it's backwards compatible to everything on Xbox One, but there's going to be some stuff you can't do on your old Xbox One that you can do here, more than just, you know, looking slightly prettier.
Clicking ultra on the graphics setting.
Yeah, there really is stuff we can do with this. I think they could have done that. And I think that wouldn't have necessarily been a bad idea, because Xbox One isn't exactly setting the world on fire, right? But they didn't do that. And the other thing that they could have done, which is what I was hoping for and they clearly didn't do, is make it a VR machine, make it a VR box that has the power to really output. And you know, maybe we will see that at some point. Maybe they will start talking about VR. There was this weird thing. Somebody tweeted me the Best Buy ad that Best Buy put up for the Xbox One X. And in the ad, it talks about how it's the premium VR console. So clearly, Best Buy didn't invent that, right? That, at some point, that was part of the message.
They also called it the Scorpio in that ad, right?
Right. But clearly, Xbox or Microsoft, you know, gave them that messaging at some point. So I think that's going to happen, but I feel like that could have been part of the original pitch.
So that's one thing I got right of our guesses. I got a lot wrong, but yeah. That's one. Because I do think that it's this simplified message. I think, you know, if the original Xbox One was so big because they were afraid of the heat sink failure or whatever from the 360, I think with every iteration now of the Xbox One, they're afraid of how bad it went when they first debuted it, that it was all these other things with Kinect or whatever. So I really think they've been on this laser focus of games. This is a workhorse. This is the most powerful. This is what this thing is. And then this year, they were really focused on, here's a butt ton of games coming out.
Right.
And I don't think this is a business problem for them per se, because it's all the same money. But I look at it And it's just like, well, they're all coming to PC. It's like this weird thing where I don't know if they're trying to sell consoles or not. I don't know if that matters to them or if they care that I'm buying it on the Windows Store or whatever, because I don't quite know what the reason is to pick up this box. I just don't know what their reasoning they were giving people.
The other thing about that you mentioned, the heatsink problems and stuff like that, and they talked about this, it's got liquid cooling, which is pretty insane for a console.
Yeah.
But you know, they didn't mention that being in lieu of fans. You know, there was a they could have made a big deal about that being making the system
like silent.
Quiet. Yeah, but yeah, they didn't say that. So I wonder if
PS4
also...
Pro is pretty quiet, right?
Yeah, I think at this point.
I was kidding.
Oh. No. I don't know. I think that could have been a cool thing if they had talked about how quiet it was, but maybe it's just not. Maybe it also has fans. But the fact that it's so tiny and the fact that it, you know, this is clearly a crazy piece of design, but I just don't know. I mean, okay, so the conference was, they said, what, 42 games and 22
yeah,
exclusives. And they're kind of playing this semantic game of what is an exclusive. There's a lot that seem to be timed exclusives. There's a lot that are exclusives for console at launch, you know, is what they kind of were talking about. So that'll be out on PC as well. Not a lot of actual first party content. More third party stuff was really what wowed me. But there's a lot of games to talk about, so I'm not going to just step through it because I don't think we have the time to talk about every single thing. We'll leave Anthem for the end because, my God. But but let's talk about some of the stuff that was interesting to you. Do you want to bring up a few things?
Yes, I'm going to get the name wrong because I don't have it written down in front of me. I left my notes not in my office. The Last Light, First Light, what was that beautiful game that I want real bad?
I don't know which one you're talking about.
First Light.
Which one is it?
It was like pixel art animated.
Oh, The Last Night.
Last Night.
Yeah,
thank you.
The Last Night. Yeah, N-I-G-H-T.
I don't quite know what the gameplay is for that, but hot dog.
Yeah. At first I thought, are we getting like an official Blade Runner game because this new Blade Runner movie is coming out?
Right.
But it's not that. It's its own IP. And, you know, if you've ever thought pixel art was beautiful, you ain't seen nothing yet until you see that game. Woo!
It was stunning. So for me, the big four were that one, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds being a console exclusive or a limited exclusive for Xbox One. I think that's huge.
It is.
I really think that's big.
That's the big one that isn't just a timed exclusive. That's literally like Xbox One is the only console you play that game on, which is big.
I think that's really big. And then Ori 2, you tweeted at me and you were right. That game's going to make me cry. It looked, somehow they found a way to make Ori even look better. It's stunning.
And they clearly know it's special. Like they brought a real piano and a real piano player out to start the music. Like they knew this game is something special. You know, they kind of gave
it. And it had an incredible score, the first one too. So yeah, that was awesome. And then one I'm sure that you're excited about too. And I think the art direction or the change, you know, and how they presented it is appealing. I think Crackdown 3, you know, Terry Crews is awesome. That guy can do no wrong. I don't know. I mean, he should be as popular as The Rock, if you ask me. Like, he's just infectious.
Yeah.
With his personality is so great. And I like the Borderlands/Telltale art style they've kind of adopted for the game. And I thought it was a really cool, effective trailer. I noticed they didn't talk about destructibility the way they had talked about it 2 or 3 years ago, but it showed orbs, it showed jumping, it showed rolling with my friends, and it looked cool. So I'm on board, and it's day and date with the X.
Yeah,
that was interesting.
It really does seem like the sort of big launch game, because a lot of the games they showed actually are launching before the X.
Yeah, which is interesting, right?
Yeah, very interesting. I wish I had seen a little more of Crackdown. It felt like exactly what I expected, which is not a bad thing. And you show me orbs, you show me jumping to get them, I'm already in.
Right, yeah, but, that's all I needed.
Right. But, I mean, I literally don't even need guns or explosions in that game. Just let me find orbs constantly. But I also was a little bit disappointed that there wasn't more there. Like you said, the destructibility of environments that they had been talking about, of the, using the power of the cloud. You notice they didn't mention the friggin' cloud once this year. The cloud has evidently dissipated, and it's sunny skies in Xbox land.
No, it's June gloom in LA. The cloud is just a little low. It's not, not, you know.
And they don't have, you know, they don't have those destructible environments anymore. Like, where is the giant buildings bit you knock down with a punch? I want to punch some buildings down. That is that gone? Is that not in the game anymore? What's the deal?
Yeah, because originally that was kind of what in the multiplayer. It wasn't in all the parts of the game. And I think, again, my gut says it's still there in some form or fashion. They were really just trying to distill this down into one thing. And I think sometimes that's a miss because it raises questions for people that remember things from 3 years ago. But I really think their thing was like, here's the game. Here's the game showing what you love.
Yeah.
Let's get out of here. But I have high hopes for it, so I hope it doesn't let me down. And then my question to you, Jeff, looping back on mine before I can ask you some of your hits, do you think this is Battlegrounds is going to get a boxed release? Is it going to be a finished game, or is it early access, and how will console play? Like, I love Battlegrounds, but it's still a mess. And they showed a little bit of that mess when the people were escaping in their motorcycle and sidecar, and they hit a box, and that kills someone in the sidecar, which is, it's hysterical on streams, but it sucks when it happens to you in game. And I'm so curious, like, do you think this will resonate with console gamers the same way PC gamers were used to that kind of thing, I feel like?
Well, he said an interesting thing when he was on stage demoing it or introducing it. He said something like, it'll have Xbox One X upgrades in the finished version, or something along those lines of, like, when the finished one is done or something like that. I do feel like it's going to be a boxed, done. I mean, maybe not boxed. Maybe it'll only be an online purchase. But I do think it'll be like not an early access thing. I think it'll be more like, this has been, you know, it's gone gold, so to speak. But I could be
Matrix
wrong.
Himself in the chat says they already have it on. Early access is already on Xbox. Yeah, I know that. There are already early access games. But I'm just curious how they're going to present PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. Oh, and the last thing, E3 fashion tweets are back, you guys. And I need to correct myself. I was wrong. I tweeted that Lydia Winters is black on black on black, rocking that emo 2001 look to show off Minecraft. And she tweeted back and letting me know that her pants were gray.
All right. Well, good for her.
So, good for, she's
correct,
a great. Generally speaking, Xbox was on point with their fashion. It was all like laid back and cool. And Phil's leather jacket. I also have a green leather jacket. I really liked it.
All right. Well, I'm glad we spent time talking about it.
me too. Now bore me with the crappy game. No, I'm just kidding.
It's
let me hear about Sea of Thieves more. Yawn.
Actually, dude, I thought that looked good. I was not impressed with it last year when I played it at E3 last year, but I thought what they showed made a real case for how that game could be fun. And it looked like there's a lot of really fun, cool things to do with your friends. It looked like Ark, you know, but instead of the central theme being craft stuff and survive, the central theme is explore places and discover stuff. And I'm so down for that. If these islands really are full of secrets and you have a map that has a riddle on it, come on. That's awesome. I mean, you know, swimming away from a shark or whatever, okay, whatever. It's not that great. But just the camaraderie of finding a place and figuring stuff out and launching yourself out of a cannon and doing goofy things. I think we're just at the beginning of these kinds of games like Ark and PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds, where they just facilitate fun social interaction in a context that is ostensibly challenging. But I love that the central theme, and I could be wrong about this, but it seemed like the central theme is explore and just go places and find things. That I would be really into. I thought it looked really good.
I hope it's great. To me, I think the water looked cool. I liked the pirate setting. I liked the art and, you know, kind of the cartoony look that they've taken with it, that Rare's taken with it, but the moment-to-moment gameplay to me didn't look great, like loading the gun and shooting and kind of the running, like all of that the way I'd actually play this fun, you know, hanging out with my buddies experience, then it looks super awesome to me. But I hope when I play it, it's tighter and it controls well. And then I'm curious, you know, it almost feels like, what was it, 3 years ago when we were seeing, and they're not all out yet, but this return to the first person shooter game is back, you know, like the competitive first person shooter is back, yeah. Unreal and Quake. And I feel like now we're at this point where everybody is doing this streamable game, right? It's right. Like this hang out, play, and create. Like, right after they showed PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, they showed that other game that was the same thing.
Darwin Project.
Yeah.
Yelly commentator guy. It's like, ooh, woof.
That was awful. But the game itself, you know, I think that game itself looked pretty cool, like a super powered. I think so. I like PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. So give me like hero classes or powers in it. I think that could be fun.
Yeah. I mean, I was definitely much more interested in Sea of Thieves, but. I don't know. I think that game could be cool. I don't think it's going to be a system seller, but I think it could be really fun if, you know, if people play it. It's, you know, I like it. But the other, you know, you've mentioned a couple of the ones that piqued my interest, but I also want to mention what is that game? Oh, The Artful Escape, which is the little dude who plays guitar and it looks so fun and silly.
It looked beautiful. I don't do drugs, but I think that's an acid game, right? Like that's what was happening. Like the head got all happy and then twisted, and the guy was like, no, 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 no.
I don't know, but I loved it, and I just want more of it. So like that and The Last Night were like back to back, and I was just like, these, you know, when you have an entire conference full of, you know, shooting zombies and then shooting other things that look sort of like zombies but aren't zombies, and then shooting demon zombies and then zombie demons and then shooting some more of the orc zombie demons. And then you show something like The Artful Escape or The Last Night, like those things pop because they have such a vibrant originality to them. Like there's a just of how different it is. And I think those things are immediately more interesting in the context of like 1,000 shooty shoots, you know. And I like a good shooty shoot, but – you know, sometimes these things back to back to back to back, it's like, okay, oh, it's another shooty shoot. PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds was like right after State of Decay 2, and it just like felt redundant, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I love a good shooty shoot, but I like the way that Microsoft has, and for a while now, I think ID at Xbox is still a horrible name, but I like the way that they highlight and they've, you know, brought to the forefront some of these smaller games and given them space to really stretch their legs. And like Ori, the first Ori, I think they did a great job with it. And I know Cuphead's not out yet, so that's frustrating. It has a date now, but you know, they've done a good job showing that. And I like what Xbox has done, people at Microsoft have done in terms of getting these littler games or these not shooty shoot games space on the console.
You know, there was a lot of stuff shown. There were not a lot of huge standouts for me. It just felt like solid. It felt like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff coming.
Did we have, neither one of us has mentioned?
What?
Origins.
Oh, yeah. No, I thought that looked really good. I thought it looked Assassin's Creed The Witcher.
I was surprised they were showing it as like an Xbox. I was going to say Scorpio still. An Xbox One X kind of thing. Like it looked the same to me. Like after some of the other games they showed, and Anthem, which we'll talk about, looked like, here's my mom, give me that game. It looked like Assassin's Creed to me, and like it didn't blow me away graphically, which I know games aren't just graphics. And then it looked kind of the same, except now you're using a hawk buddy to tag things. I don't know. I think that game is still a question mark. I know afterward some interviews went up and they talked about some of the things that make it different. And again, never, you know, dismiss a Ubisoft game because they sell like crazy.
Yeah.
But I thought in terms of like how it showed at the conference, it kind of was a, I don't know, Breath of the Wild's out. Do you guys remember that? It's like, did you learn from it or not? I can't tell yet.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's too quick for them to learn from it. But, it looked like there's loot. It looked like there's a much more robust, interesting RPG system, although they clearly just ripped off Destiny's menus for some reason. I think it's like the weakest part of Destiny is their menu system, but whatever. In the action combat felt more like The Witcher or Horizon Zero Dawn than it did, you know, the Assassin's Creed franchise. So I'm much more interested because I like those games. I want it to be influenced by The Witcher because I'd rather it be more a pure action RPG than just, you know, this kind of weird hybrid stealthy game where I'm hiding in the crowd and jumping into hay bales. I just never was into those games. I know a lot of people love that franchise. I'm not one of them. So the less it can be like that and the more it can be like a franchise I do enjoy, The Witcher, then the more I'm into it. But
yeah. Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Like, I was like, oh, neither one of us talked about that. Like, I think they thought that was a big moment for them because that was the first gameplay reveal of that game. And I think a lot of people kind of were like, well, yeah, okay.
I mean, it looked cool.
That was big.
You slide down the edge of a pyramid. That's cool.
And sphinxes have noses.
Yeah, because back then they did. And then Shadow of War also had a lengthy demo. Shadow of War looks real good. Right.
Yeah. The only reason I didn't mention it is just because I've already talked about like that. It was more of me wanting that game and I wish it wasn't delayed. I want it to be the best game possible. But the only thing that'll be a hang up for me, I think, playing that game is if the cool stuff is it's paced poorly because I'm popping into menus too much. It's that fine line between like base building or planning my attack and just running in there and attacking. And I'm not sure how over the course of whatever it is, 40-hour campaign, how much will be menu management and planning versus that Arkham-style combat that I love so much.
Right. So a lot of solid, I thought it's a lot of solid titles. And then Anthem came up.
Record scratch.
Yeah. And everything I thought I knew about video games changed in an instant because not only did the most beautiful thing I think I've ever seen a video game do, but it was like, oh, this is what I've always dreamed of. I mean, hopefully if you're listening to this, you've already watched the trailer or, you know, the gameplay reveal, not the stupid teaser trailer that they showed at EA yesterday because that was like nothing. The actual gameplay reveal, which they said was all in real time, all being actually the game, starts in a first-person view in this kind of cool marketplace, very sort of Middle Eastern inspired but futuristic. There's a giant robot walking in the background. And even in that first-person view, it doesn't look like any other game. It doesn't look like other first-person games. Characters are larger in your view than in most games. Your relationship to them physically is different. You're sort of more in that world, I think. It just feels large in comparison to you. It was immediately interesting and evocative. And then you get you step into your sweet mech suit and you just leap off of something and you got Iron Man jet boots. And you fly through this giant open world that's probably the most gorgeous thing I've ever seen a video game do. And even that was like, I haven't seen anything yet because then the moment where everything – I lost consciousness a little bit was when she dove under the water. And I was like, what happened? She went under the water and then it gave her an achievement for discovering the crevice under the water. And I was like, okay, discovery, cool shooty shoots, the Destiny game I've always wanted but didn't get with actual Destiny, friends playing together, a really interesting, cool, vibrant future world, loot, upgrades, role-playing. What – give this game to me. I want Anthem. I want Anthem's Blue Shield immediately.
Before or after our next the next United States presidential election, like 2020? What are we? Yeah. I mean, this, and I know that BioWare is pretty big team, and that it isn't the same team that worked on Andromeda, and they've been working on this for years. But this looked incredible, and I don't know when this is coming out, and I want it now, and oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah, oh my god is right. I mean,
I didn't even mind the dumb co-op chatter that was happening because I was able to tune it out and just look at the game. Like, I didn't even, oh, cool, dude, you got your mech, dude?
It was pretty restrained. It was pretty restrained. Yeah. As those go, you know, it could have been a lot worse. They were pretty restrained.
I just shooed it away and was just like, oh.
I came home and almost immediately we got on and started streaming. So I've been out all day. But the one thing I did when I got home is I watched that trailer two more times when I got home.
So good. It's a great trailer.
It's a great trailer. It's like a lesson in trailer because it's actual gameplay. It shows a lot of what you want it to, what you want to know about how the game will feel and play as.
What are our rules about Game of Show?
I know. That's what I was just going
to
bring up.
Do we have to be hands on? Do we have to see someone play this? Can we wait till next year? Like, what are we doing?
I know.
I haven't seen Spider-Man yet, but like, what are we doing?
What are we doing? It's so going to be my jam. I mean, every criticism I've ever had on our show about Destiny and what I wanted from Destiny looks like this is the game that I was describing when I thought. I mean, it's not Destiny's fault that it wasn't what I thought it was going to be, right? That was more me imposing stuff on it. So it's not really Destiny's fault, but the stuff that I was imposing on Destiny, it looks like this game. Ugh.
Yeah, that's my only fear. Like, I'm imposing my fears of those games on this game because I love Destiny. I really enjoyed The Division, but they both learned a lot over their lifespan.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if this game was also learning alongside them, or if this game's going to have its own host of problems that it hasn't quite got right. And what we really want is Anthem 2. But
I hope not.
You know, who knows? Who knows at this point? But in terms of like a reveal, a trailer, I almost wish EA didn't show anything. Because then it would, I mean, I get it, whatever. But like, that just would have been such an amazing moment. Or if EA showed this, like that first trailer, because if that was the first thing you saw from it, I mean, it reaches through the screen and punches you in the face in all the best ways.
Yeah, I mean, it ended Microsoft's conference with a crescendo, and it made me come out of that elated and excited for the future. And clearly they are using it as a way to show off what Xbox One X can do. But it's coming to PC. It's coming to PlayStation 4. So it's not like it's an exclusive. And I think that if they had shown this at the end of the EA conference, we would have thought EA is crushing it this year. EA's conference was insane. So it really is all about placement. And whatever Microsoft paid EA to say, don't show it yours, show it at ours. Like, the guys clearly on stage were like, okay, we can't show you much. It's just this little teaser. Here it is. But I promise tomorrow, please wait. They knew that it was a very, very special thing. And I'm over the moon for this game. I really, really can't wait for it.
Yeah, it looks stunning. And it was a heck of a way to take a press conference home. Or presentation, whatever they call them now. Showcase.
Yes, indeed. All right, let's move on to Bethesda. So Bethesda this year did something a little different. It's only their third year doing a press conference. Last year, they had this crazy airplane hangar place where they, decked it out with all kinds of stuff. Blink 182 played. It was a big thing.
California Deluxe Edition, good album. Go get it. Go ahead.
Yeah. And Christian was not there. I was. Don't care about Blink 182. It's a point of contention.
Hey, happy Prince's birthday. Who cares? Let's move on.
Oh, you're killing me, buddy. This year, invites to the Bethesda press conference or whatever it is, showcase.
Bethesda Land.
So it's like this old 60s aesthetic of Disneyland where they had the old like map of the park, And they had different areas based on the different franchises that fall under Bethesda's rubric. And there were a couple that were under construction, weren't revealed yet. And everybody thought it was a very charming, at least I thought it was a very charming way to invite people to their show. Little did I suspect that it was legitimately a carnival, legitimately an amusement park that they constructed in a parking lot in downtown LA, that the invitation was not just a fun metaphor. They were legitimately creating this insane fantasy world of food and drinks and activities. They had a full-size Ferris wheel. They had caricature artists. They had cotton candy and popcorn and snow cones and turkey legs and corn on the cob. And it was nuts, dude. And each of the areas that you, as you walk down this massive pathway, each of the areas is themed around a different one of their game franchises and has all kinds of three-dimensional art and iconography from the games and different activities to do there based on the games. There was like this creepy prey tent that you go into that was all dark, and they were serving a special drink in there, and they had like you scan your barcode and you get pins, and there was, it just was nuts. It was nuts. And then, so there's like 2 hours of that, of just like walking around me, like stuffing my face, trying to find all the different foods and try them all. And that's a different podcast, but I ate a lot. Let me just say, more than I should have. I had two candy apples. I had two candy apples. They were giving out candy apples. It was delicious. And then, so 9 o'clock PM Pacific time is when the presentation was to start. So then everyone was sort of crammed, lined up, waiting to be let in to where we knew we would go in and sit down and watch the press conference, like you do with any of the other press conferences where you go in and you're all lined up. And it was getting a little intense because everybody was crammed and this place was packed. And we were waiting. Everybody was standing in front of the doors. And then as it got closer and closer and closer, finally the doors opened and they let us walk in, and we walk into this massive area with all these crazy screens. We walk in and we look around, and it's like this giant open area like you would have at a rock concert, of like the mosh pit.
Like, you know, a Chainsmokers concert.
Yeah, you know, as everyone knows, the very, very popular and widely known band.
They actually are.
By me, Christian.
That doesn't surprise me, Dad Rock.
So there are bleachers as you walk in behind you. And I'm like, okay, well, let's go get some. I was kind of at the front of the line, as I often am. And because I'm an idiot and I get places early. But Anthony Taormina and I were there, and we both were like, let's go grab a seat in the bleachers, walk over bleachers. Oh, bleachers are for Bethesda team members only. You have to have a special bracelet that only the team members have. So every single person of the hundreds of people that were there, it was a massive amount of people, other than a very tiny portion, were made to stand in this mosh pit through the entire press conference.
At least it was like, quick.
Well, it wasn't that quick. Like we were at some sort of rock concert. I mean, it turned into a rock concert, but it was the weirdest decision. Like Pete Hines comes out. He's cool, but it felt like we were there worshiping him like he's some rock star, rather than professionals who are about to get briefed on products that they're announcing. It's just such a – it was a very strange tone.
It felt like it could have been a direct. Like, I don't know why this was a stage show.
It was all video, right? There was – Pete Hines like started it and ended it, but other than that, it was just watching a video. And it was a really well-produced video. I loved it. I mean –
oh, see – I thought the tone of like the carnival really was jolting between, because like the games would have like these epic scores and it'd be like, and I thought it didn't flow as well as it could have. Like, it pulled you out every time.
I really liked it. I thought the jolt that I felt, and maybe I don't know if this came through at home, but we walk into this like intense rock and roll mosh pit, and then it has like a countdown, like zoom, zoom. 10, 9, 8, 7, you know, and he's just counting down so hardcore, and you're rock and roll, and here we go. And then it's like, adorable kids of Bethesda people. And I thought that was really charming. I loved that. I mean, as a new
when
dad,
they were asking where their parents are, they haven't seen them in 6 years. That was that same video?
Yeah, why are you guys still here? I'm waiting for mommy and daddy to finish.
I don't know what my dad does. My mom does something. I haven't seen her.
Yeah. But it was really cute. It was really charming, I thought. But it just felt very dissonant with this like hardcore rock and roll aesthetic that they established. Anyway, yeah, I thought the carnival segue stuff was actually pretty neat, and it felt, you know, like the old 60s, like Disneyland. Well, here we go, kids. You know, it's got
and
that.
Bethesda's got a lot of games that are in that, you know, dystopian, or I don't know quite what that word is. It's like that alt future.
Yeah.
50s, 40s timeline or whatever.
Yeah, certainly Fallout is like that. And Dishonored even has a little of that going on. And
Wolfenstein.
Right. So, it's I thought it really worked. And it was fun. And I particularly liked, I thought the writing overall was strong and consistently funny. Like, it was legit funny rather than sort of manufactured funny, which a lot of these press conferences are. And you're right that it was a more of a direct than anything else, like a slick video, but it also, they didn't feel the need to like trot the developer out on stage and have them awkwardly, you know, talk about the game. It was just, here's a really slickly produced discussion of it that we don't have to, you know, go through the paces of like bringing this person out who kind of doesn't feel like they want to be here. And I don't know. It just felt better.
Also, you'll be owning these games in less than 6 months.
That is the other great thing that I think, you know, you and I have praised about Bethesda before, but I think bears repeating. They have gotten into this pattern of, here's the stuff that's coming out this year. This is what we're talking about at our press conference. We haven't even talked about it publicly yet before, but we've been working on it, and now it's coming out this year. Get excited. That, I think, is a wonderful pattern to reinforce, because how cool is it that they're just – they've got enough stuff that they can just talk about the stuff that's coming out in 2017, and then every year you know, hey, we're going to find out what's coming out this year. That's really cool.
Yeah, and also I don't care about anything else because Wolfenstein 2 – oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, you're kind of doing the what's the opposite of bearing the lead?
I'm just talking about the thing that
you're leading with the lead. You're leading with the high point.
I'm doing the thing that got me excited while I wait for you. I tweeted at you. I thought you died during the Bethesda press conference. Like, I tweeted that I won bingo, and then you didn't reply for 5 minutes. And I thought we lost you, Jeff. I thought for sure we lost you. I know what your game of show is going to be. I know how you're going to try to shoehorn VR into your game of the year. I saw it all. I saw it all. But I wanted to mention Wolfenstein 2 before I lost you for the next hour.
Well, we'll talk. We're definitely talking about Wolfenstein 2, but they started the conference off the way every conference should start
with massive, story of the week,
massive cool VR games. And I believe I nailed that one. That one was when I you know, I predicted that they would. I think we're still going to get
those games.
Yeah, I know, but I predicted it would come out this year, and they would be saying, okay, you know, okay, like anyway. But I still think that we're going to see that game again at the PlayStation conference. So
that was the big question. Can PlayStation run Doom and Fallout in VR?
I think so. I will find out. Maybe not, because they only talked about Vive. They didn't even mention Oculus. And I know, you know, Bethesda isn't exactly big fans of Oculus. But,
Why not?
You know, they only mentioned Vive. I still predict that we will see those games at PlayStation's conference.
I think that'd be incredible. I mean, Doom, I've heard, is really fun and it looks great. I'm a little bummed that it's still the teleport feature, because they had been showing Doom I don't know if I want to say a couple of years, but a good amount of time. And every time people would ask about the locomotion in the game, it's like they would say, like, it's something we're working on. So it still very much looks like it's kind of a horde-based shooter without tons of movement. And what I loved about Doom 2016 was the way it really reinvented movement in a first-person shooter, in terms of, instead of falling back to get health, you would keep running into the fray to kill people to get health. And I don't know if the VR version does that.
Well, yeah, I caught a moment, and you know, I only saw it once live in real time. I haven't rewatched any stuff they may have put online, but it looked to me like there was at least one moment where it triggered, you know how they flash a color when you're able to do the
glory fiction kill or whatever it is. Yeah.
It looked like when that happened, the person then like tagged it like they're going to teleport, and they teleported to it and did the finishing move as one, you know, as one movement, like the teleportation itself, like, triggered the finishing move.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm curious to see how. I hope it's great. But Fallout, I mean, I'm on the record of saying Fallout 4 is not my favorite game, and this won't change it. But the way it presented itself, I mean, holy crap! If it's the whole thing and free move in VR, like, Jeff, you're quitting DLC, right? Like, you're quitting / film. Yeah, I need to take over for We Have Concerns. Like, we've lost you.
And you have
raise
to
your
adopt,
son.
You have to adopt my child. Yeah. If that's cool with you, I hope.
Yeah, I don't have a boy, so I'll take him and just be like, you're gross. What's that penis doing in my house? But otherwise.
Yeah, it didn't look like they were doing teleportation, which when they showed Fallout 4 VR last year at E3, they did have it as teleportation, but it didn't look like that. It looked like free movement.
Yeah.
And all of the like customization and house building, you know, stuff that's in Fallout 4, like, obviously is going to be way better when you're able to just like manipulate it with your arms and hands. So cool looking, dude. The only possible thing that they could announce that would make that better for me, and it's impossible, I know, but it would be if they're like, your save game from any console can transfer over.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah, that'd be rad. But
or maybe they will. Like, I don't know. Do those games have? I don't know. On the PC side of things, are there like save unlocks? You know that I mean, they're opening up mods in a big way, and they're featuring paid mods. Maybe that is something they'll do with it, where you can jump to checkpoints or something. But then you're taking over from, you know, like a predetermined character, so it's not like your game, but you can kind of experience whatever you want.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I can play through it again. The cool thing with Bethesda games, too, is you can make completely different choices.
Yeah.
But, man, yeah, I'm very excited. I did maybe lose consciousness a little bit after that bit, and I didn't pay attention to the rest. But, you know, they announced a new Dishonored chapter thing.
I think that's super smart. They did it with Wolfenstein before. I think that's great, like a 4-hour or 6-hour Dishonored, and you can kind of replay it over and over and over again the way Arcane makes their levels. I think that's really, really smart.
We should talk about Skyrim for Switch.
That's going to sell a ton, and it looks like crap.
It's got motion controls, and it's got Amiibo support where you can play with a Link costume if you
that's all it needs, man. That's all it needs.
That is all it needs. That is going to that it, dude, that got the biggest reaction of the whole, like, people went bonkers in the live audience when they saw him holding the Master Sword in Skyrim. Are you kidding me?
And they zoomed out and you're wearing your, was it the Wind Waker or no, the Breath of the Wild cloth that he's running around. Yeah, it was awesome.
Amazing. But what do you think of the motion controls?
I've never seen anyone take a Joy-Con off a Switch that easily as they did in that demo. Yeah, I think the motion controls are dumb. I think the game is, you know, fantastic and certainly has its fans, but I also noticed the way they haven't, I don't think this is the version we just got on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Like, I think this is the 8-year-old version or whatever it is, right? Like, I'm just super curious. I want to know more of the details about this game. But I think putting Zelda in or Link in it is the smartest thing they could have done. And who cares after that? Yeah, like, do you think you'll be playing this with Waggle, or do you?
I'm not going to be playing it at all, I don't think. But I mean, I think it's cool. I can't see myself. I'm going to be playing Fallout 4 VR, so I don't have time. I don't have time for redoing Skyrim again. But it's kind of cool. The idea of having Skyrim portable is pretty good.
I mean, I play way more Breath of the Wild because it's portable than I would if I only had it on Wii U or something. So I do think it's going to find its fans. And I do think there are Nintendo fans that haven't played Skyrim, and it's an incredible game. So I think it'll do well. I am a little annoyed that it looks like it's going to come out as a $60 kind of release, but, you know, whatever.
And then the two games that were under construction that we didn't know about, although everyone predicted them and everyone was right. The Evil Within 2 is the first, which that CG trailer that they played with the creepy Duran Duran song.
Stunning.
Amazing. But then they showed like a few seconds of actual gameplay and I was like, oh, that doesn't look as good as that pre-rendered trailer you just showed with the cool like milky faces and stuff. But then the actual game was like, look kind of crappy. But I wasn't a big fan of the first one anyway. So,
I can only handle so many of these games. It looks like it's, you know, leaning into what it does well, and I hope it gives people a new point to jump in. It does seem like they're very much continuing that story, which I always think is interesting from a lore standpoint. And then hopefully they've improved upon some of the things that the first game had its problems. Whatever you think of it, you have to admit it had its problems. So hopefully they've learned from that, because it is creepy in a way that, you know, a lot of games aren't anymore. And it you know, like that slow motion head twitching, arm coming up, or like it's really good at what it does.
Yeah. Horror games have to be real something special.
VR.
And be in VR. But let's talk about Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus, which is the close of show game. First of all, the way they unveiled it with this really funny and really well-made live action intro thing that was kind of a parody of old 50s TV shows, with sort of a Lassie-esque thing, but with this crazy monstrosity of a mechanical fire-breathing demon dog, made me laugh genuinely. And then it went to other crazy things. And then they showed the game itself which is taking the idea that Wolfenstein was built on, which is, you know, what if the Nazis won the war and we're in Nazi land all of a sudden, just to this crazy extreme, man.
Like America 2019, and it just felt, ugh.
Wow. What a gut punch. There's a shot in the thing they show in the trailer of small town USA, Main Street USA, in this town with like Ku Klux Klan members walking down the street all happy and Nazi paraphernalia.
Go learn your German. Oh. And they were like, all right. And oh man,
it's
creepy in the brightest of sunlight way. Right. Yeah. Like, yeah. But then they showed the action. Holy, the first game was so good. And that little expansion they did was so good. And this game just looks to have even more of that. It's just incredible. There's like that. I think someone has made a GIF of it where he like runs and slides down the ramp and like pops two dudes and then stands up and jumps on a guy or whatever.
Yeah.
Ooh.
But
and it's this year. It's October. I'm done. I can't.
Yeah. It's all October. Oh. Everything's in October, by the way. Now, October is the new November.
Is this game a show? Oh God, Spider-Man, be good.
Well, this will be full on playable at the Bethesda booth. So we will be able to play it, and we'll talk more about it, obviously. But I am, you know, that I liked that first game. I was not as big a fan as you were. You really loved it. I thought it was cool. I thought it was clever. I liked a lot of the narrative flourishes of all that sort of time-lapse stuff that happens in the hospital. And I thought it did a lot of things smartly. But this game, the writing looks to be completely taken up a notch. You know, just that sequence where he's interacting with those two people is like, let me just be clear, I'm not a Nazi. And then the guy points the gun at him. He's like, ah, crap. And he puts the visor up and the dude shoots the visor and then he pulls it down. He's like, I told you, I'm not a Nazi. It's like really good writing, like legit good writing.
Yeah, they straight up got me when the girl there too, she has a grenade and like she has a pin and then she like, uh-oh. And I on the stream, like I did a talk over the stream or whatever, and I just go, oh man, I can't believe they made her incompetent. She seemed like such a cool character.
Yeah.
And now they cut that off in these, they make her incomp. And then like right after I finished saying that, she like looks at the camera and goes, just kidding. And I was like, oh, it was awesome. It was like, normally you expect things and you see, I'm like, oh great, here's the incompetent sidekick that just likes to blow crap up. Blah. And like, no. She's the not quite sane in the head one who's going to have fun with BJ. Like, this looks awesome.
It was a complete surprise for me how much I was really blown away by that game. I'm just very excited for Wolfenstein 2, the new Colossus. So yeah, a real front runner for game of show alongside Star Wars Battlefront 2. And then Anthem is just sort of in its own weird fantasy place of like,
yeah, we're gonna need to decide what that is.
Yeah. But let's wrap this up. We've been talking for a while and it's getting real late, but give me your thoughts on the first couple of days of press conferences for E3.
I love video games. I think these were all great. There are so many incredible games that have already come out this year and so many more incredible games coming out this year and the next few years. I mean, I think it's easy to be a cynic. No, Need for Speed looked incredible. Anthem looked incredible. Wolfenstein looked incredible. Or a sequel to Ori. Are you kidding me? Cuphead got a date. Battlefront 2. If you had told me they didn't talk about VR, hopefully they do that at Sony. I still hope that there's VR in that game. But like, show that to 10-year-old me, Battlefront 2.
Yeah.
I would have died. I would have had a heart attack and died. It's awesome. What about you? Like, your kind of feeling going into it.
Yeah, I mean, I echo all of that stuff. I came away really jazzed about stuff. I think Sony has a real opportunity tomorrow to knock it out of the park. And it occurs to me that, you know, Microsoft clearly won the last generation. The Xbox 360 generation it dominated. And I think they did it because they really got online multiplayer in a big way really early and understood that generation was going to be all about that. And they did it. And they got an audience because people wanted that experience. And that was the console that understood it and did it seamlessly and best. But Sony has caught up on that level. And that isn't as big a deal anymore. It's just sort of expected now. And what Sony has, and Microsoft, if I was running Microsoft's games division, the thing that they are lagging behind on, and it is so clear by their press conference, is first party development. They don't have the games to say you can only play that here, and these games are must plays. And yet Sony has 6, 7, 8 of those, of like, you have to play Horizon Zero Dawn if you're a gamer. That game is just so good. Everybody I know is excited about God of War. Everybody I know is excited about Spider-Man. These kinds of experiences that Sony is able to produce first party, or, you know, so close to first party that they're exclusive, are differentiators. And Microsoft did not come to the party, come to the conference with, in my opinion, strong enough differentiators to justify a $500 console. I'm still excited. I think the Scorpio, or the Xbox One X, is a very exciting thing. I'm really excited to see more of it, to touch it and see it. And I'm probably going to pre-order one because I'm sick in the head and stupid. But I do think they could have done a much better job of giving real reasons beyond, hey, it's mildly prettier, to buy this console. I don't think Sony did a great job of doing that with Pro, right?
PlayStation. They did, and they've continued to do a horrible job.
Right. Yeah. But they have done a great job in saying, here's why you should be in on PlayStation in general, rather than Xbox. And that lives and dies by the fact that they have these incredible first-party games. And I think we're going to see more of it tomorrow, and it's going to be hard to give Microsoft the edge here if all we're talking about are State of Decay 2, Forza, and Crackdown 3, like that, and Sea of Thieves. That's not enough. I don't think that's enough to really say, hey, you have to be in on this console generation.
And it's not enough if, you know, I think you'll read about it on NeoGAF and we'll talk about it or whatever, but it's also not enough to say, you know, you can play that in true 4K at 60 frames per second, whereas on PlayStation, you'll be playing at 900p. Like, for most people, they have the thing. It's going to play the thing. Anthem's going to look great on the thing. You know, as long as the games don't run like total garbage on my thing.
Right.
Yeah, it's hard. I don't know what they do, because you're right, Sony. I mean, off the top of my head, there's going to be new Uncharted content. There's rumor we're going to see a little tease of Last of Us 2. There's Spider-Man. There's Days Gone. There's God of War. Gran Turismo. There was one other one. Whatever. It doesn't matter. That's already six.
Yeah.
That are like
of stuff. Lord Muff 874 in the chat says Anthem. You can play it on your PC, you can play it on your PlayStation, you can play it on your Xbox. Yeah, everybody's going to be playing Anthem. I want to play it. I can't wait to play it. I'm probably going to play it on PC. That's where I do most of the games like that, right? So I played The Division on PC, right? That's where I wanted to play it. It was a great thing that Microsoft had that part of their conference. It made me walk out of there feeling like I was floating on air, because I was so excited about what gaming has to offer. But that game is not a reason to buy an Xbox.
Right.
I think $250 for an Xbox One is a pretty great reason to buy an Xbox, but that's not a reason to buy an Xbox.
I still think Sony's going
to
kneecap them tomorrow. I really do.
I don't think you're wrong. I really don't think you're wrong. And I think they're going to lower the price of the Pro. So even further. We'll see. I definitely think Microsoft brought a lot of games, and there's a lot of really great stuff coming. Another game I didn't bring up that I'm really excited about is Ashen, which is the Annapurna game. It just looks really interesting. So there's tons of stuff. There were game after game after game. I just didn't see the, like, oh my God, I have to have an Xbox to be able to play that thing game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we are going to see that from Sony. We are going to see, like, oh my God, I have to play God of War, and the only way to do that is to own a PlayStation. Oh my God, I have to play Spider-Man. The only way to do that is to own a PlayStation. I think that's what's going to happen. And
then who knows with this continued Japanese resurgence. I mean, Microsoft certainly tried with OG and last gen to kind of get in there, and then Japanese development quote unquote fell off. But then this year too, it's been de facto exclusives with things like Nier and
Final Fantasy. Oh, you can play that on Xbox.
Yeah. Right. There was one other one. Persona 5.
Right.
And I think now that these killer games are coming out, I think we'll go see more of that. It's hard. I love my Xbox One. I'm sitting here right now next to it. But if someone were to ask me today what they should do, it's hard to come up with a bunch of reasons why, unless all of your friends are on it, then that's easy. Just do that one. But otherwise, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of over the zombie thing, but I'm still sort of excited about Days Gone. I want to see that game. And to compare Days Gone to State of Decay 2, like, I know a lot of people loved the first State of Decay, and there was some interesting, like, you know, world building stuff in State of Decay 2 trailer that they showed, but it's just no contest. Like, the more interesting title for me is Days Gone. And I think Sony continues to just do that. And I get accused of being a Sony fanboy, which is weird because I was always the Xbox fanboy last gen. So I don't know how I can be both, but whatever. I'm just trying to, say it how I see it and be a straight shooter and call them how I see them. And what I'm seeing right now is Microsoft giving a solid amount of content, but nothing that is just sort of like you have to own an Xbox One X. So I think
I agree. And all I see in addition to that is Sony piling money into your house. So, between those two things, I'm on the same page.
I wish. I would gladly take money piled into my house. Anyway, we will be back tomorrow talking about that very Sony conference.
Oh, I'm not watching the PC conference, just FYI.
You're not at all?
No,
just
I don't
check
think
on
so.
If there's any updates.
Yeah, I'll be checking in, listeners, but don't expect me to stream and talk over it. Fool me once, shame on whatever, however that goes.
Yeah.
I hope there's great stuff, but I don't plan on watching it.
Yeah, I hope there's great stuff. We'll see. But yeah, we will be talking about Sony and Ubisoft tomorrow night, and we hope you tune in for that. Again, I will be on Anchor all week long, all throughout the day with updates. I will be talking about every game I touch, so be there if you want minute-by-minute updates. Again, that's anchor.fm/NLB for the show. Just download the Anchor app, though. It's easier.
If you want parenting tips, you can do the same thing there.
Hey, yeah, that's right. Yeah, your show about parenting is on Anchor. So if you want Christian's minute-by-minute E3 parenting tips.
Well, sometimes, you're trying to watch E3 stuff, but your kids aren't cooperating, and you need a tip on how to do that. Hop over to anchor.fm/DOP for Department of Parenting and get in on it.
Right. That's dope. what else, Christian? What else do you want to plug at the end of here?
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to go to bed. Video games, man. I'm going to be in London later this month, Austin in September, San Diego in September. Shows. Video games. This is video games, dude.
Video games.
See you on the floor.
We love it. See you on the floor. Enjoy E3. We will leave you with a little more of the hype train. Chugga, 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 chugga. E3.